Hello and welcome to this episode of Passionate About People. My name is Phil Dave. I'm a broadcaster who specializes in several subjects, I suppose, but the main ones being technology and also men's mental health and well-being.
Hi, I'm Graham Godfrey, and it's so lovely to be back, Phil, after all these months. I'm a radio show host, positive mindset coach, and just launched a fabulous music community called thesupergrouppro.com.
Joining Graham Godfrey and me on this particular episode is Michelle Lowry, who's a holistic healthcare specialist for animals. And, well, rather unusually for Passionate About People, you have another title, don't you, Michelle?
Yes, my dear brother, Graham Godfrey. This is exciting just to be here and doing this with him.
Excellent stuff. Well, I feel out-siblinged. I should have got my sister involved in this one. But anyway, what we are here to talk about today, first and foremost, is, well, the title of this episode is Passionate About Pets. And that is because, Michelle, I believe that you are rather, well, how can I put it? You are in tune with our furry friends. Would you care to expand a bit on your work, what it is that you do?
Absolutely. Thank you, Phil. I have learned over time with my own animals and now with clients over the past 20 years that our animals have a much deeper connection with us, both emotionally and spiritually, that goes far beyond what we would perceive our animals are in our lives. So we feed them and we love on them and they're part of our family. We take care of them and we give them the best life we can give them. And then what I've learned is there's this beautiful spiritual, emotional connection where they're actually amazing teachers and guides. So I've spent the last 20 years really exploring this. And with each animal and family I meet, I just get to learn more and more about it. And it's beyond fascinating, Phil.
Graham, do you share your sister's love of animals?
I do. I do share my sister's love of animals. It's a wonderful thing. We sort of, Michelle and I connected. Obviously, Michelle is in America and I'm here in the UK. And I sort of have a, I suppose you can call it a talent, I've been told, where I'm intuitive with people, but she's always been much more intuitive with animals and has a fabulous connection with animals. And it's something. It's so difficult. I found it very difficult to explain because when you actually see it and you experience it, it's almost magical. But it's a wonderful thing, especially for owners of pets who perhaps have got a pet that isn't particularly well, or is a dog that barks all the time, and you want to find out a little bit more about these precious animals that are in your lives.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned about life because there was a quote that I remember reading, which has really stuck with me. And I'm not really sort of into quotes, you know, unless it's sort of from well-known people who do make quotes. I don't even know who said this, but they said, with an animal, they are a part of your life and you are their whole life. In other words, sort of like, especially sort of an animal, if you adopt from infancy, whether it's a kitten, a puppy, whatever it may be, bunny rabbit, whatever. The point is that even though they're a small part of your life, you are hopefully, if all goes well, with them throughout theirs. And I just thought that's an incredible thought.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think we underestimate how much we bring them into our lives and how much we're actually missing out on. I love that quote, Phil. I hadn't heard that before, but very, very true. We are their everything. And so how do we passionately bring that forward in a way that they can really express themselves a whole lot more than we give them credit for? And I think that's another piece of it.
Tell us, Michelle, there was a story. I had some clients where the dog's name, I think, was Zane, and it kept barking regularly, and they didn't know what to do. And I said to them, look, my sister lives in America. You should give her a call because she might be able to help. Tell us that story of what happened.
I will. Thank you. You know, it's amazing because it took me a long time to accept that this could be done over the airways, so to speak, and that energy traveled even if you weren't geographically in the same place. And that's a whole other story. But yes, so I met this couple remotely on WhatsApp. And they basically said they had a dog that was barking all the time and barking at people and barking at the fence. And they just couldn't figure out what was going on. The dog was actually a rescue also. So, you know, you do have the history that for some often is unknown. And that's part of what I do, is I fill in the gaps of the history so that you can understand the background and then understand the behavior. So we set up an appointment and I work off of a picture and questions that somebody may have. And then I sit and connect remotely. It's telepathic, intuitive communication, which we all can do. We're all born with it. I just happen to do it all the time. And I sat with this dog and started asking questions and getting a feel for the dog and the dog's personality and what was going on. And this particular dog was actually very, very visual. So a lot of what was coming through were images and pictures. And one of the first things the dog kept telling me was a connection to a bell. And sometimes when something is random like that, I ignore it in the beginning because I need to know it's true. And so several times during this conversation, this bell kept coming up. I need a bell. I need a bell. I want a bell. And I said, all right, I'll pass the message along. And then from the barking perspective, the dog showed me that it had come from a family that was, it was like an Italian family. It was very loud, arms flying everywhere, lots of noise, everyone high level chatting. You know, when you get passionate about conversation, every third levels always go up. And so really the dog had learned to speak loudly. And so the barking was a way of speaking loudly because that's all it knew. And so one of the recommendations that came from this was for the couple to actually speak at a much lower tone, a much quieter, to invite the dog to actually come down in volume. So it wasn't anything other than the dog had learned to shout. And now it was about teaching the dog that they were listening without shouting. And they could, if they crouched down and they talked really quietly, that the dog would bring down its own volume over time. And then some ways to introduce the dog to people based on what the dog was showing me would work. So that was all cool. I sent off, everything gets written down and I sent it off to them. And then we arranged a call to kind of follow up on it if they had any questions. And the first thing that they said was when they rescued this dog, the dog had a bell around its collar. I always get the chills when I share this story. The dog had a bell around its collar. And they had lost the bell. So the dog was asking for them to put the bell back on the collar. And that ended up being one of the things that calmed the dog down amongst some of the other stuff that came up in the suggestions. But what happened for the couple that had never done this before is I could not have known about the bell. And so for that to be the first thing the dog wanted to share with me was also to show the couple that this was a real thing. And that to bring something in that I could have known nothing about was helpful for them. And they basically said, once I mentioned the bell, they were listening and reading everything else that had come up as being the truth. So it's amazing how this works and how the animals will work with me to help their people.
When did you first discover that you had such an amazing understanding of dogs? I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I love dogs. I have two of my own. I am an animal lover through and through. I do believe that people don't give them enough credit for being as intelligent as they are, as connected to humans as they are. So I'm with you all the way. But even I, listening to your story, would think, is this really possible or was it just sheer dumb luck? Where did you first discover you had such a deep connection with animals, especially dogs?
That's a great question, Phil. And I believe I've always had an innate ability to connect with animals, but it's always been very nonverbal, very feeling, very sensory. I've always been comfortable around them, kind of more so than people, certainly as a child. And when I look at old pictures of myself with animals, I'm clearly communicating, but it's very nonverbal. So I believe it's always been there. And I believe what's happened over time with my own animals, especially that kind of kicked me into this work, is sitting kind of heart to heart and asking for a better understanding of a situation that's going on and allowing them to communicate in a way that may be visual, it may be audio, it may be a feeling. And as I kind of tapped into their energy more, this whole other world opened up, and it just fascinated me. And I was so intrigued by it that it's been my focus and my work ever since. And they all speak differently. They all show up differently. They all show things about their people and their situation differently. So I'm a perpetual student, honestly, and I just enjoy, you know, what's next, what's happening, what am I going to learn next from the next animal that I work with.
I went to visit Michelle a few years ago, well, way before lockdown. So the thing with Michelle and we have, I don't know what it is, we have a connection. So Michelle and I have a connection. It's grown stronger as we've got older. I have this connection with people. So, you know, when I'm coaching, unless I connect with the person that I'm speaking to, then I don't think I can help them. But if there is this connection, then when we do get together, it is the most powerful, we have the most powerful conversations. Now, when I was in America, Michelle took me to a dog rescue center. She said, I just want to show you some of the work that I do. So I sat in this large room and this dog came in barking and really going absolutely mad. And I actually got a little bit scared because it was going nuts. And then glanced over to Michelle, stopped barking, wandered over and just laid down next to her while she stroked the dog and was obviously connecting with the animal. And then I said to Michelle, what's going on? What's happening? And she said, well, this particular dog, its current owner is ill, and therefore that's why it's at the dog rescue center. But the reason it's been barking is because the owner beforehand used to tie it up, and most of the day it was tied and it could never move, and it used to cause a lot of problems to this dog. And this dog had been tied up, so obviously it was barking when it came into the room. And I said, oh, that's really interesting. And then as she finished talking, the manager of the rescue center came in and said, oh, sorry about that, Michelle. Here's information about the dog. I've got the clipboard here. And I said, oh, can I just have a look at that, please? And he brought it over. And on the clipboard, it said, it gave the whole history of what happened to this dog. And Michelle hadn't have known that. She didn't know that. She only knew it once she'd been communicating with the animal. So it was at that point where I thought, wow, this is something incredible. So tell us more, Michelle, about the horses that you connect with and the animals and what work you've been doing to help owners and their pets.
I love that you were able to witness my work, because honestly, it has to be seen to be believed, or the communication has to be like Zane and the Bell to be believed, because it is out there for many, many people. And so I really honor and respect that too. But I do have a story I want to share. I have so many stories, but one of the stories that I would love to share is the story of a couple that I had been working with for a number of years, and their cat that was a very senior cat. And every so often we would do check-ins and see what the cat needed. And this cat was very resilient, wanted to stick around even though she was super old. And so we would do these check-ins. So I'm trying to remember if the cat had already passed at this particular communication, but I was doing a communication with the cat because I also do animals that have transitioned, so I can connect with animals in spirit. So if people have questions about how and when they died, we can connect and kind of help people find some peace around all of that. So this particular one, I'm chatting with the cat. We're getting, you know, to the core of things, and I'm writing stuff down. And all of a sudden, this white Scotty dog appeared as an image in my mind, clear as anything, came barging into the session. And I knew they didn't have a dog. I don't even know what this dog is about, but I'm like, all right, well, you're here, so welcome. And we carried on with the session, completed the session. And then I contacted the couple and I just said, you know, I just want to let you know the session's over and we can talk about it. I said, but I do have one question. I said, there was this white Scotty dog that barged into the session energetically. And I know you don't have a dog, and I just wanted to mention it because clearly it was important to the dog that I mention it. So at the exact time that I was doing this communication, this couple were having lunch with another couple, and that couple had recently lost a white Scotty dog. And so the dog had come through because the energy was open as a way to let this couple that were grieving know that their dog was okay. This is the stuff. You can't create this. You can't make this up. And I'm not that creative that I can make up amazing stories and tell people things about their animals. And I think that's why I'm not creative, because I know in my heart that what's coming through is the truth from the animal and not my mind creating an answer to a question. So that's another story that just blew my mind. I have so many.
Well, the thing is, though, Michelle, obviously you believe enormously in what you do, but I just wonder how much believing in it is sort of half of the battle. So in other words, if you have someone who has maybe a problem pooch or a cat that maybe doesn't know how to behave itself or what have you, if they were to sort of benefit from services such as yours, do you think they have any hope of being helped by someone such as your good self if they ultimately don't necessarily sort of believe in your methodology?
Yes, and I understand exactly what you're saying, because being skeptical is actually a great trait, because it means that you're open to the idea of something being different. And a lot of the times, either I have repeat clients or the new clients that I have are people that are desperate. So their animal is either old and in transition and they don't know what to do. They've had a diagnosis and it doesn't feel right. They've spent hundreds at the vet and they still don't have an answer. And they're kind of at that point of going, I don't know what else to do, but I know I need to do something else. And so this just becomes a reaching point, an opportunity, why not, because we've tried everything else kind of experience. And so a lot of my clients in the beginning, that's how I get them. It's really kind of like, I don't know what to do. I'm at my wit's end. Somebody told me to call you. I'm calling you. This is what's going on. And so what happens from that is, because I don't ask for a lot of information, I'm able to help people to understand through the communications and through the information that I receive that this is actually a real thing. And honestly, Phil, I come from a computer background. I'm a corporate girl for 21 years. My mind is super logical. It's super black and white in many, many ways. And so when I first got into this through my own animals, everything had to be undeniably proven to me that it was real before I would ever go out and tell anybody that this is what I did, let alone do it for a living.
Did you get quite freaked out the first time you discovered this?
I did, because the first time I really got anything, I had just lost my first dog in a really, really bizarre and horrible situation. He was only 7, and I was desperately sad that I'd lost him. And I was driving to my hairdresser one day, and this amazing energy came into the car that was incredibly powerful and very emotional. And this dog always sat in my front seat of my car next to me. And it was this overwhelming emotional feeling that had me just bawling my eyes out in tears. And I just sat with it and I went, oh my God, this is you. And his name was Kobo. I'm like, this is Kobo. Undeniable. Coming from a shut down heart place, coming from a computer background, this, I just knew somewhere deep inside of me that this was my dog. And I think what he did was to come in that way. So one, it was undeniable. And two, it would open me up to then do the work that I've been doing for the last 20 years.
I think in the UK, we're very cynical about all this sort of stuff. And a lot of people don't believe it. And there's something called evidence-based thinking, where a lot of people say, well, when I see it, I'll believe it. And they need to see something to believe it. I believe there's a lot of power in stuff that you can't see. We know it's there, but you can't see it. And I remember, Michelle, you told me something once. Sometimes when families are having problems, maybe they're not connecting anymore. The kids have grown up a bit. They're not connecting. People aren't eating together anymore. That the family sort of lost it, the glue that sticks it together. And I remember you told me they should get a dog, and or they should get a cat or something like that. And I've seen evidence of that. I've seen evidence of a family buying a dog, and all of a sudden, the family come together again. And the dog brings everybody together again. And they go out for walks, and they start to exercise. They eat together. And it becomes like a central focus for the family, almost like a focus that they had lost previously. So, you know, sometimes I think of Dr. Doolittle, you know, talking to the animals, and isn't that such an amazing fantasy? But, you know, I've seen it, and I've also seen lots of people experience it. And I think once you experience something positive, perhaps if you're a non-believer and then you believe something, a lot of people then try and convince everybody else. But this is real. This is real. The work that you're doing, Michelle, is just, it's unexplainable, but it's amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about the horses in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I should start with my own horse, who I had for 21 years. He was 27 when he passed 2 years ago. My absolute rock, my gem. He was the most incredible being outside of being a horse. And he really was one of the animals that taught me that there's a lot more to a horse and the companionship and the partnership of a horse over and above the traditional riding them and grooming them and putting them out to pasture and feeding them and all of the things that are very traditional. He taught me to go deep into my emotional self. He was probably the biggest healer for my own health and my own heart that I've ever come across. And he would keep me on track. He would keep me on my path. He was my therapist when, you know, life wasn't going so great and I would go hang out with him. This horse guided me for 21 years into being the person I am today without a shadow of a doubt. I know this to be true. And so that also created the passion of wanting people to understand the depth of relationship they can have. And these animals come in as teachers. They come in as guides. They come in to show us how to be a better person, how to take better care of ourselves. The number of times with the horses, they teach people about ego. They teach people about agenda. They teach people about softening and not just being so focused on a project that you're missing the heart-based emotional relationship you can have with your horse. What I love about working with horses is you're working with 1,000 to 1,200 pounds worth of animal. And so when an emotion shifts or changes, or their physical body starts to heal, because I do body work as well as communication work, and they relax and they release stress and they release tension, it's amazing to me the effect that it has on their person who is fully present and watching everything that's going on and knowing their horse a whole lot better than I do, to know that this is something the horse never usually does or something the horse hasn't shown for a long, long time. And the number of times the people are in tears as they watch their horses go through a healing process, emotionally, physically, whatever it might be, and that the relationship then between the horse and the person completely changes. And it puts everyone on the same page. So very often with animals and people, we live life on different pages. And that's where the behavior comes in. Because behavior is simply the animal trying to bring our attention to something that we're not paying attention to, whether it's our health, our mood, our anxiety.
Well, actually, curiously, on that very point, I was just thinking at that moment when you were talking about that, whether or not it's merely just an animal's way of communicating, because obviously if they're picking up on something, and I don't care what anyone says, I believe that animals have got a level of a psychic level, if you will, another sense that we just can't comprehend because we're not built in that way. And therefore, they obviously can't tell you if they're picking up on something. You hear all the time about dogs that sniff out various diseases and alert their owners if they're in difficulties with potentially some sort of medical condition that maybe sees that they fit or something, and they start barking at them to tell them. It's ultimately just their way of talking to us and communicating, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And You know, what we've lost as human beings is the body language piece. We do everything verbally. And then when we're not heard or something's going wrong, we increase the volume of our voice. We don't use our body language and we don't observe before we react. So animals kind of come in and make us aware of what we're doing. They will stop a couple but arguing by doing some weird behavior and it cuts the argument because they just wanted to stop them from arguing. And how do they do that? So they're very, very interactive. And I feel like the lesson for humanity is to reignite what we do know about being able to use body language and emotion and spirit in order to communicate. And that's what they do naturally, that you're never going to undomesticate that. We've done it for ourselves, but you're never going to do that with an animal. And so that's where I believe they're just the greatest teachers.
And you've written a couple of books about this, haven't you, Michelle?
Yes, thank you. I have. My first book I wrote is Hindsight is 2020. And it's really to help people that are going through the pet loss and grieving. And it's my own story of my second dog and first dog that I lost and how I learned the transition period through their eyes, not through my eyes. And it was completely an awakening for me. And now I can help people. The second book I wrote was the story of me and my horse. And it was actually channeled to me by my horse to show people the kind of lessons he taught me in 21 years to make me into the person I am today. And it's called The Rock, Destiny Through the Eyes of a Horse. And it's really to help people see that there's a whole different side to this communication with animals, to being with them and having them really invite us to be different and to be in their world.
I'd say we could do a whole program or a whole podcast on the loss of animals in itself, because I have to tell you, we've gone through several losses, I'm afraid, as a family. For me, one of the absolute worst was when we lost our cat. Her name was Boney. Beautiful, just sort of typical domestic tabby cat. And because when we found her, she was quite skinny, that's where she got the name Boney. She soon made up for that, though. Very, very well-fed animal towards the end of her days, I can tell you. However, all I would say is that I probably was inconsolable for the best part of 3 days solid after we lost her. I wasn't even like that after I lost my grandparents. That's how close we were. Anyway, never mind, enough about that. Michelle, it's been absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much. If people want more information or potentially want to get in touch with you, where do they go?
They can reach me at my website, which is Niko, N-I-K-O-E, naturaltherapies.com. nikotherapies@gmail.com. I'm on WhatsApp also if you're in the UK and you want to reach out.
And if you want to get in touch with me, just go to grahamgodfrey.com. That's G-R-A-E-M-E, grahamgodfrey.com, or thesupergrouppro.com. And you'll find me somewhere within those two areas.
And if for whatever peculiar reason you'd want to get in contact with me, you'll find me across social media at Mr. Phil Dave, and it's Phil with one L. It's been an absolute treat. So, Michelle Lowry, holistic healthcare specialist for animals and sister to our very own Graham Godfrey. Thank you very much indeed for speaking to us on this episode of Passionate About People.